What was that funny. Like when you got recognized? This should just be the podcast. What?
Just kind of weird.
What did they say
hey,
to you?
I follow you on, hey, is that Mike Gianella? I'm like, yeah. And I'm thinking, do I owe you money or something? And, you know, it's like, no, you know, I know you from, you know, fantasy. It's like, oh, okay.
Done. Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Hello, and welcome to episode 134 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, Mike Gianella. Mike, the Mets are putting a beating on Jolie Chacin, which makes me very sad, but you very happy. This is where we are in 2017. What's going on, buddy?
Well, not much. Just ready to talk about Fab and free agents. And yes, I'm watching the Mets not lose, which is good.
So to help us do all that this week, we have a very awesome guest joining us. He is the host of the On Baseball Writing podcast, one of my favorite podcasts right now. He has a superstar caliber lineup of guests, by the way. You should see some of the names he's had on this show. Fantastic. You can download it on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from. He's also a member of the BP Fantasy team. He's got a new gig writing for the Sporting News. He's got a lot going on. His name is Eric Roseberry. What's going on, Eric? Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. You know, the trick to my show is I bring people on, ask them questions, and let them talk. So I don't have to offer any analysis. So I'm a little nervous you're going to pull the curtain back on this whole charade tonight.
It's a little bit of a role reversal. Well, you had Mike on, so.
That's true.
What was the most memorable takeaway from that discussion? I'm interested.
Oh, man. With me and Mike.
But you didn't listen?
No, I listen. I go.
No, I meant George. Like, George, like, what's a big takeaway? I'm like, George, you didn't listen?
No, I listened to you enough, Mike.
That's
no, it was good to have Mike on because we could kind of share our experiences of being older at this and having kids at this, and so there was some shared life experience there I don't always get.
How did you start the podcast? Like, what was the original idea, and what's that experience been like for you? Because to me, I've listened to a couple of the episodes. I haven't listened to all of them, as you can tell, but the ones I have listened to, like the one with Carson Cistulli, like, it's fascinating stuff, and it feels like a lot of the writers and the guests that you have on, they get a chance to talk about their life experience and experience in the industry in a way that you don't get to on any other format. So I think it's unique from that standpoint. So how did you, you know, conceive that idea?
Yeah, so when I started writing about baseball, I just had all these questions that I wanted to ask writers that I liked and assumed if I had these questions, maybe some other people did. So thought I'd record those conversations, and was super surprised by how supportive people were of it. And Ben Lindbergh came on really early, which I think helped give some credibility to it, to the point where Tim Kirtjian's coming on tomorrow. So pretty surprised with how many great writers have been willing to come on.
So it's great to have you on the show, Eric, and not just because you're the only person in America who has a greater appreciation for Billy Hamilton than I do, but we're excited to be able to call you now an official friend of the podcast. A little bit later on in the show, I'm going to share a conversation I had with Joshua Hausam. He's the co-editor-in-chief of BP Toronto. Talked about a lot of relevant Blue Jays topics, guys like Marco Estrada, Jose Bautista, the rest of the rotation up there for the Blue Jays. A lot of fantasy-relevant topics going on with that team right now. So I had a chance to talk with him. I'm going to share that interview coming up later on in the show. But first, we're going to talk with Eric and Mike about the BP Free Agent Watch. That's my weekly column. It goes up every Friday at Baseball Prospectus, one of the many reasons to subscribe to the site. So you should go check that out right now. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the names in that column, some of the hottest waiver wire pickups in fantasy baseball, and then we're going to talk expert fab. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. You can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to get access to all of our content. If you love the work we do, that's the best way you can support us, and it really means a lot. So go to BP, subscribe today. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you can get access to the Bat Signal. It's our exclusive fantasy answering service. Personalized advice. It's great. You're going to love it. Trust me. You can follow all of us on Twitter. I am at George Bissell. That's with two S's and two L's. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And Eric is at Eric Roseberry. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, whatever app you use to listen to this podcast. Make sure you go and subscribe, like we were talking about with Eric's podcast, On Baseball Writing. You can get that on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever. And don't forget, finally, BP Ballpark events are back. I want to make sure I plug those before we delve into the analysis here. The first one is coming up on June 17th, so that's right around the corner, less than a month away. It's at Oriole Park at Camden Yards. You can purchase your tickets on baseballprospectus.com. Go there for more information. We hope you'll join us. There are three additional dates: Citi Field on July 1st, PNC Park in Pittsburgh on July 15th, and the Target Field in Minnesota on August 5th. Visit Baseball Prospectus for more information. Gentlemen, let's dive into our new segment, the Free Agent Watch, and I want to start off by talking about the way I write the column. Is I do it for 12-team mixed leagues, 15-team mixed leagues, and then AL and NL only. So I think it would be helpful to talk about some of the players for the shallow formats first, and then we can go into maybe some of the deeper guys. And the first name right out of the gate is Ian Happ. He's the guy I wrote about for hitters in the 12-team mixed leagues. And Mike, he's the guy who was picked up on Expert Fab, so we can kind of kill two birds with one stone here. But Ian Happ, we touched on him a little bit last week on this show, but it looks like he's staying up for good at this point. I would assume so.
I think he is.
So
yeah, I mean, it's like anything else. You know, if he doesn't perform, he won't. But you know, I don't think they're going to send him down. You know, if he's, it's not the other way. It's not like you have to hit, you know, 340 and be the next Michael Conforto. He'll stick if he hits.
So how do your expectations change now as far as his value goes the rest of the season? Because I think when there were some playing time concerns, you had a guy you couldn't roster in a shallow mixed league, but now I think you can. And what do you see as far as statistically his ceiling being? Because I'm having a hard time putting a finger on it, what exactly it looks like, a full season of Ian Happ the rest of the way. It's a tough question, isn't it? Like, 20, we just don't know.
20 home run pace, maybe 25 home run pace. You know, the tough thing is that last year, I think it was like 16 homers and 15 steals, or the other way around in the minors. And now all of a sudden, and one of the reasons he got promoted is he's hitting for more power. And he's not running. I don't think he'll run just because the Cubs generally haven't been a big running team. They're more sabermetrically minded. That's not to say they don't run at all, but I just don't see Happ being that guy who, you know, suddenly starts breaking that for them. But yeah, the power looks legitimate. And you know what you'll see, and you saw a little bit of this weekend, the pitchers have already started to adjust him a little bit. They're throwing a little bit more, I think it was low and outside, and he was kind of flailing at that. But he's talented enough that I don't see why the power won't at least be there. You know, one thing we've talked about too, not just with Happ but across the board, what's tough about Happ isn't just him. It's that so many guys are hitting for power now. There was a time where 20, 25 home runs, you'd be like, oh, wow, that's, you know, that's great. Or, you know, 20, 25 home runs from a middle infield guy, that's great. Now you look at it like, yeah, that's good, but there's a whole complement of players who do that. So a lot going on there, but I'd say that Happ, definitely want to have him, you know, in a labor format, like 15-team mix and deeper. I would certainly consider him a 12-team mix too. He's that good, and he should play.
Eric, what are your impressions of Ian Happ so far? I mean, it's hard not to be impressed by what he's doing, but I think it's fair to say he's exceeded all of our expectations so far this season as far as getting to the major leagues and then hitting for power almost immediately upon arriving there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's definitely exceeded expectations. And, I mean, he's in a great spot where, you know, Mad's not going to shy away from messing around with that lineup as he needs to find a place for him out in the field. And so, yeah, I mean, he's showing great plate discipline, even beyond that, over a 15% walk rate right now. Contact rate's a little low. You'd like to see that come up. But like you guys are saying, he's got to be owned now. And Playing well above kind of what I expected if he was going to get a shot this season.
All right, the next guy I wrote about was Tommy Joseph, and he's a guy who kind of cratered in April, but has gone on a pretty solid run. Last Friday, since May 1st, he's hitting .395 in the month of May, 12 extra base hits, and just over 50 plate appearances. Had, another home run over the weekend. He's looked pretty good, Mike. You're there locally in Philly. It seems like the playing time concerns are gone now with Joseph, and he looks like he's going to get back to being a mixedly relevant guy. Is that a fair assessment of his situation now?
Yes. So Joseph slumped the first month, and the funny thing about that is it looked at the beginning of the season, it looked like unless Joseph was awful for half a year, there was just nobody behind him or there wasn't anybody immediate. But then Rhys Hoskins went on a tear at AAA at Lehigh Valley. And Lehigh Valley is quite the pitcher's park. So for Hoskins to have the power there that he had, that combined with Joseph Swoon made people think, well, maybe Hoskins will be up much sooner than expected. The Phillies have no reason to push him and they haven't been pushing their prospects, but it seemed like Hoskins would earn a call-up. But, I just looked this up today because Ryan Lawrence, who writes for the Philadelphia Daily News here, tweeted out a stat about Joseph. I think it was an OPS stat. I added it made a little more sabermetric. And Joseph in May, it's a small sample, of course, but fifth in WOBA among qualifiers. The guys ahead of him are like, Votto, Trout, Buster Posey, of course, Brett Garner, which is another conversation. So yeah, Joseph, he is what he is. He's not going to be that good, but you're talking about somebody who can hit for power. He's a right-hander and he showed he can hit righties at a league average clip and he mashes lefties. So he's playable everywhere. He's somebody in a 12-team mix that kind of like as a, if you're facing a lot of lefties in a given week or it's a split week for the Phillies with lefties, he's a good guy to start. I liked him in the season. I thought the power was legitimate, and I thought that he and Eric Thames would have comparable years. Of course, I didn't think Thames would go off in April the way he did, and I didn't think Joseph would go off the way he did in May. It just all kind of balances out sometimes. At this point, I'd say I'd take Thames, but Joseph certainly has shown, as I said, that he's not just going to like wilt.
Yeah, I mean, I envision Joseph as more of like a three-category contributor. I think you're going to get the counting stats as far as runs and RBI, and you're going to get home run power, obviously. I'm a little skeptical on the batting average. I don't see him as being anything more than like a 260 hitter, so just kind of ride the streaks. I don't think he's going to be this extreme, like a Justin Upton and end of the spectrum extreme going forward as far as the hot and cold spells. But overall, I think a pretty solid player and somebody you want in a mixed league. And another guy who's kind of jumped on the radar, sticking at first base for a moment. I don't want to talk about Justin Bour because I think we kind of know what he is, and this is something, Mike, that you talked about all in the offseason. Justin Bour is kind of who we thought he was going to be. But Justin Smoke, Eric, is a guy that you wrote a piece at Baseball Prospectus this week about in the Buyer's Guide. What are your general takeaways on Justin Smoke? Because I think your verdict was buy if you need a first baseman. So how legit
that was,
how legit is this for Justin Smoke right now? What are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I mean, looking at some of the analysis that people had before the season started, he came out and said he wanted to focus more on contact this season and not be as power heavy. And so, I mean, so far he's doing that. I mean, for his career, he's got about a .226 average and he's hitting .278 right now. So, I expect some of that to come down. But there's a lot to like about what he's doing. I mean, as you kind of break down his game, it's not a BABIP trick. It's not kind of the normal places you would look to see what this fluky thing is. It really hasn't been that for him. It's just his contact rates jumped about 15% this season, and he seems to be riding that out pretty well. One of the BP Toronto guys did a really good job breaking down also why he probably wasn't as bad against left-handed pitchers as people assumed, and so part of the reason for his success is he's hitting left-handers way better than he has at any point in his career. And so there's a handful of first basemen kind of nursing injuries right now, and he looks like a pretty decent option if you find yourself in the spot looking for somebody.
Mike, who would you rather have at this point, Justin Bour or Justin Smoke?
Man, Well, you know, I like Boer, and you know, I liked Boer coming into the season better than most. It's just tough because to change your perceptions, but I think I'd take Smoke because, for one, I agree with a lot of what Eric said as far as that change being legitimate. You know, and a couple others have written about him as well, and I've, you know, I haven't analyzed that to that a large degree, but I've seen enough to know that. And we've always seen this with Smoke; we knew the power was there. My feeling with Boer is that I know his numbers have improved somewhat this year against lefties. I just don't buy it as a long-term improvement. And, you know, we know it's a tough park. I know it's a better park in Toronto. It's just a better hitting environment. All that makes me go Smoke. You know, and the thing that's tough with that, too, you know, some of this is a format issue. Maybe in a deeper format, I'll take Boer because there's some stability there with the playing time. In a shallower format, I want the upside of Smoke.
So, Brett, he had the best tweet of all about this. He said, just like we all predicted coming into the season, Justin Smoke's breakout is being overshadowed by Yonder Alonso's breakout, which is awesome tweet. Let's talk about some of the pitchers here really quickly, and I'll kind of skip ahead to the deeper mixed portion, the 15-team portion here. Two guys, Luis Perdomo and Zach Godley, and we've kind of touched on them throughout the year. On this show, but Eric, we haven't gotten your perspective on either of them. I know Mike and I, we've talked a little bit about those guys, but between Perdomo and Godley, which one sort of stands out more to you if you're in a situation where you needed to pick up a pitcher in a deeper mixed league?
Yeah, I kind of have a soft spot for Perdomo right now just because he has been that for me in a couple of leagues this season. So obviously there's been quite a bit to like about him this season. He's not gonna blow you away with the strikeout numbers or anything, but he seems to keep the walks down fairly well and is in a decent situation. Obviously the ERA isn't where you'd like it to be with him for someone on your fantasy roster, but DRA and some other things suggest probably should be a little lower. So with his results across the board, I'm willing to kind of ride that out with him the rest of the way.
Mike, anybody else in this column that you want to discuss? And then we'll touch on some of the names that I'm considering writing about this week that I think fantasy owners should consider. But is there anyone else that you think is worth talking about right now?
Off the top of my head, no. Just because we've kind of covered, you know, a lot of this ground already in like previous weeks.
Okay.
Is there someone you wanted to mention here besides those pitchers?
Nope. I'm gonna bring up a few names that I'm thinking about for this week. Because okay, we're kind of workshopping this segment as we go, as you can probably tell listening to this. So, thank you, everyone. The first guy that stands out to me is Alex Avila. And I'd be really interested to know what you guys think of him. I'll start with you, Eric, because Avila's batting .360 with a .473 on base percentage. His weighted on base percentage is .471 right now, which is absurd. It's like Miguel Cabrera right now. He's got 5 home runs already. The nice thing about Avila is that he's catcher eligible in a lot of places. So if you can get this type of production at catcher, it's kind of crazy. But when he signed in the offseason, I don't think anybody had any expectations that he'd be anything more than a backup catcher. What's going on here with Alex Avila? Because I've been sucked in a bunch of places now on him.
You know, at catcher, you're probably going to pick him up and enjoy it while you can. I mean, where I said Smoke wasn't a big BABIP case, Avila does have a .489 BABIP right now, which I doubt will last very long. But he has done some good things. He's cut down on his strikeout rate, hard hit rates up. So there are some things to like. But, I mean, as everyone is clearly aware of, there's some luck involved with Avila right now.
See, here's the thing for me that makes me think it's sustainable. You know, for his career, he has a .350 on base percentage. So he's always had a pretty good eye at the plate. And he's talked a lot about, like we brought up with Ryan Zimmerman this year, that he's finally healthy. He feels like he's had enough time where he's been able to recover and he feels good and he's able to drive the ball when he is making contact. So that's the part of this for me that makes me think we're seeing a little bit of a shift here with his game, where he's retained all those sort of old player on base skills, but now he's just able to drive the ball more because he's healthy. Mike, where do you stand on Avila? Do you think this is just totally unsustainable and it's not worth the investment, or where do you stand on him?
Well, I mean, it's obviously unsustainable. You know, he's not going to put these numbers up. But I have seen, you know, I watched a couple Tigers games, and it sounds to me, for one, he's healthy fully healthy for the first time in years. I actually didn't realize how much his health had been an issue. Yeah. You know, but the second thing is he apparently did make some changes in spring training to his approach that are legitimate. So no, he's not going to hit 365 or whatever ungodly number he's up at now. But I could see him hitting like 270 or 280 with some pop. You know, and the thing there to consider is the guy he's up against is James McCann, who, you know, not only, you know, outside of a few early home runs, is just has done like nothing, but his framing metrics are really like bad. So it's not like sometimes you have these situations where a catcher is in a position where, like, well, you know, he's got some pop, but the guy in front of him is just a defensive master, and teams are very interested in framing. But that's just not the case here. So I think it's possible, even if Avila is not a full-timer, that he could take at least some of that job away. You know, what's tricky with him is he's been playing some first base because Miguel Cabrera has been kind of nicked up a little bit. That obviously won't continue. And, you know, I know Victor Martinez hasn't been great this year. It's just hard to see at bats coming from there as well. So it's got to be catcher or nothing.
Right. I think in a deeper mixed league, he's a guy who's definitely relevant at this point, though. And I think you should absolutely consider.
Yeah. Any two catcher league is as the saying goes, because, you know, once you're even a 12 team league that has two catchers, I know they're rare. You're talking about 24 catchers, and you've got some starters that are, you know, just dogs, like some of the bottom five or ten. There's no better way to put it. Like, catcher's just a rough position in two catcher league.
You're seeing way too much of Martin Maldonado in those leagues. You know what I mean?
It's funny you mention him. I cut Maldonado for Avila in an AL only, and that was a case where I went with stats over volume, because I looked at Maldonado. I'm like, yeah, he's just not what I thought he'd be. He's not going to get those sneaky 8 to 10 home runs, or if he does, I don't want the drip of that average. So I'm kind of glad I made that move.
One other hitter, and then I'll wrap up on pitchers. Eric, Robbie Grossman, he homered last night. He's been pretty decent. Yes or no, Robbie Grossman? Do you like him at all in a deeper mixed league?
In a deeper mixed league, yes. Yeah, I think in a deeper mixed league, he's somebody I'd have to look at now. I mean, the average, especially if you're in like an OBP league or something, absolutely, with what he's been able to do this season, almost a 20% walk rate. But I mean, yeah, with the number he's putting up now, he definitely could be an upgrade to something you've got in the outfield in a deeper format like that.
Okay. Mike, Brad Peacock last night. I know the Tigers, they had a late arrival. They played Sunday night, and that's always tough to ask any team to do that. But Brad Peacock was really good last night against them. 4 1/3, only one hit, 8 strikeouts. Guy looks pretty good right now. We've touched on him as a reliever on this show back a few weeks ago. Now he's getting a chance to move back into the rotation. Obviously, he's not going to go out there and, you know, strike out 8 guys in 5 innings every time out. But I think this is a guy who could be pretty decent this year. I think the implosion risk is really diminished with him now. It seems like he just has better command and control of his stuff than he's had at any point in his career.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, it's just kind of tricky because, you know, it's hard to look at one start and, you know, look at all the relief outings. You know, because he's got a 0.7 ERA, and you're like, well, you know, a lot of it's in relief where, you know, Peacock, you know, between him and Davinsky, and, you know, Davinsky's better. I'm not going to oversell Peacock that way. But they had two weapons in the pen. But, yeah, it's not hard to see Peacock, you know, flip, like, knocking fires out when Dallas Keuchel comes back. If not now, then shortly. And I could see Peacock as kind of a solid, like, number four down the line in fantasy. You know, and I'm talking, like, deeper mix. I'm not – or AL only, and I'm not talking, like, you know, standard mix. He's good. You know, it's just that thing with Peacock. You look at his line, and there's always been, he's always done this where he's put up a good outing or a couple good outings, and then it just doesn't hold. I guess we'll see. I know I'm hedging a little bit here, but
you are.
I'm just not as – I guess I'm not as high on him as you are.
Well.
What I probably want to see is I want to see the velocity stick as a starter and see what happens when he has to go out there like every 5 days for, you know, I'd say like 4 or 5 turns.
Okay. Eric, are you ready for a scorching hot take on this podcast right now? Are you prepared
for this?
Give
it to me.
I'm a fire-breathing dragon.
Are you going to badmouth Adam Duvall some more? Because I'm leaving if you do.
No, although...
That's really Brett's... you should take that up with Brett. That's like his... Do you remember Brett's prediction about him? He said Duvall will be like out of the lineup by August or something like that.
To be fair, I'm just piggybacking on Brett Sayer's hatred of Adam Duvall and his pointless home runs. But, you know, to be serious for a moment, like, give Adam Duvall a lot of credit. Like, he's a guy who... it took him a long time, and he did not get a chance in San Francisco. And I give him a lot of credit for being a serviceable major. He's a major league regular. He's a good player, but in the context of fantasy, like we've had this discussion, Eric. Like
it's just, we have,
yeah. It just isn't worth all that much, the profile. But okay, here's my scorching hot Brad Peacock take. I think he's better than Chris Devensky. I really do.
Oh.
That is a hot take.
I think he's better as a starter. I mean the slider and the curveball.
As a starter he might be.
Right.
I was talking as a reliever, just because we've seen what Devensky's done, and you know Peacock. What I'm looking at here is still a lot of walks, really high strand rate, and it's kind of like I'm not taking anything away from what he's done. But right. As a reliever, I think that role's perfect for Devinsky. I agree he's a starter. I'd rather start Peacock than Devinsky if I were the Astros.
Yeah, like I think if you're stacking it up for the rest of the year, I'd rather have Brad Peacock than Chris Devinsky. I think Peacock might be better. I mean, Eric, how on a scale of 1 to 10, that's a hot take. How high up on the scale is that?
That was hot. When you qualified it with starter, it brought it down a little bit. But 5-6, that's still pretty hot.
Fine. I'll take starter. Like, does that kick it up a notch?
It was what? 2 weeks ago, you and Ryan Bloomfield were singing Devensky's praises for like an entire segment. So It kind of caught me off guard.
This isn't a knock on Devensky. This is I think Brad Peacock might be really damn good. And no one's talking about it. I don't know. Just saying. He might be really good. Okay. Let's talk expert fab. Because... This is where the fun begins. Mike, take us through here, because I feel like we've talked about Ian Happ and Bradley Zimmer forever on the last two shows, but
talked more about Happ, I think, than Zimmer.
All right, let's talk about Zimmer then. Take me through the process here, because the winning bid was $16. Are you surprised it was that low, to be honest with you?
Yeah, I was surprised. And as I kind of pointed out, we did just spend a lot of time talking about the fact that Happ, should stay up. But, because of the Cubs and because they have so many options, there is that possibility that if Ian Happ hits 250 and the power goes away, Happ could get sent down. As much as we talked in the previous segment about how it's possible that he could, he has to stay up. The Cubs have so many options. Whereas you look at Cleveland's outfield, the guys he's replacing are a combination of Austin Jackson, Brandon Guyer, Abraham Almonte. It feels to me like Zimmer is going to stick unless he, hits 180 or strikes out 40% of the time. His defense is certainly good enough to keep him in there. And, as much as I talked about Happ having power and power being... his power isn't pedestrian, but for fantasy, there's enough guys that can do that. Zimmer has that stolen base potential where, combined with the moderate power he has, there's just a lot of value there. I was surprised that so many teams not only didn't bid much on him, there were only two double-digit bids out of a $100 budget, but it looks like 9 teams didn't even take a shot on Zimmer. And I understand there's always a couple teams that are stacked or don't have the need, but that just seems like a lot of opportunity lost there for a player who, I understand there's downside and there's risk, but there's considerable upside too.
That's a good summary of how to look at Zimmer. The thing that stands out to me are all the strikeouts. I mean, he was over 30% strikeout rate the last two seasons combined between AA and AAA, and I don't see that really changing. I mean, Eric, you're a lot closer to that situation than we are, being out in the Ohio area, but... Bradley Zimmer, does it feel like, at least locally, that he's going to be there the rest of the season in center field for them?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Mike said, this is kind of the perfect situation for him just with what Cleveland has to roll out in the outfield right now. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he stays up and gets some regular playing time. Before you even said it, yeah, the thing that jumps out to me is the strikeouts, and you'd love to see that get below 40%, which it's not right now, but just with the options they have, he's probably going to have a pretty long leash there this season.
All right, so we're talking labor mixed here. Let's move on to Matt Adams, who changed teams. He is now an Atlanta Brave. He hit his first home run in a Braves uniform the other day. I've been very anti-Matt Adams for a long time, so I don't know if I can be rational about this discussion. But, Michael, what do you think's changed with Matt Adams here? Is it simply that he has everyday at-bats now? That's the reason he got picked up in a mixed league?
Yeah, that's mostly it. And he should play for about 2 months. He showed pretty good pop last year for the Cardinals. The thing with Adams, he's a streaky hitter. And so we've seen this before. We've seen Adams go on these tears where he looks like a 30 home run guy. We've also seen him go through stretches where he just looks dreadful and you wouldn't even want him, or you're stuck with him in your NL only, but you're like, yeah, I have Matt Adams. So he's worth the shot for that upside. You know, the point I kind of made is in labor, you know, 15 team deep mix, there's always a couple teams out there carrying either a utility or a corner who's like that high average guy with no power or speed, kind of like the Martin Prado. Prado is a bad example of that this year, but you know what I'm talking about. There's always that back end guy where you're like, you know what, I'd rather make the upside play on Adams then roll the boring player out there. So he's fine at this price. You know, the thing about it, you know, again, not to, you know, compare him to Zimmer here, but, you know, Zimmer for $5 more, you had the potential for starts all year. Adams clearly, when Freddie Freeman comes back, is going to the bench. You know, there's no DH. I just can't see them moving him to the outfield. The play probably for the Braves is going to be the hope that Freeman's back before the trade deadline or during the waiver period, and they'll try to, you know, ship Adams out for something else, you know, and turn that into a better prospect.
All right, so player that is not boring, Eric, that's Chris Taylor. I really like what I've seen from Chris Taylor so far. I don't think – did you know he's never had more than 150 plate appearances in a single season at the major league level before in his career? Does that seem crazy?
I did not.
I mean, he looks good. The Dodgers, I think they're going to run into a problem here when Justin Turner comes back in a couple weeks and they have Logan Forsythe, and they have Chase Utley, and they have a logjam at first base, and you have Corey Seager. I mean, what happens with a guy like Taylor? Because it seems like he should be playing pretty much every day at this point, especially over a guy like Chase Utley. I can't figure out why he's there. Or Kike Hernandez. Like, just no.
Yeah, I mean, Mike brought this up in the article that obviously the playing time is going to be the concern, and I think that's the thing that probably scares me with him the most. If you want to ride this out as a short-term thing while Turner's hurt, I think go for it. But even those guys that you would normally be iffy on, you know, Utley's hasn't been terrible lately, and just a lot of the other positions he might find himself in, you think the Dodgers are probably going to stick with who they have as a starter there. So I'm sure they'll find ways to get him in the lineup as long as he keeps hitting the ball, but the playing time concern is enough to really temper my expectations with him right now.
Mike, is Mike Clevinger going to be the player everybody picks up thinking that something's changed and really nothing has and he is not good? It seems to me like if you look at anything in his profile, there are just huge red flags here with him.
Yeah, I mean, he might not be the guy everybody picks up, but there are always one or two believers in a guy like that. And yeah, I just don't see... Yeah, you know, I made this point in the column. Is he possibly better than Josh Tomlin? Yeah, but that's really such a faint compliment. Clevinger, wow, to me is an AL. He's an AL only guy who is going to get stretched in a mixed league, particularly if he has another good outing. And yeah, it's a mistake.
Can we be honest? Josh Tomlin, he balks every time he comes out of the stretch. Right? Have you guys seen this?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, Eric, you've seen it, right? The toe taps?
I need to go find it. I have not paid attention to this. So.
Okay, go watch it. His last start, because the reason I was watching this because it was the Reds. It was Billy Hamilton. And I was like, oh, is he going to try and steal? And Tomlin does this weird thing. He taps with his left foot a couple of times, and then he delivers. And, like, that's clearly a balk, but they don't call him on it. It's crazy. All right. Any of these other guys in the mixed portion? There's, like, whoa, 50 names here.
Yeah, you made fun of Julius Sachin. I don't think we need to talk about him again.
Well, yeah, we've been consistently wrong on him, so he is no Brad Peacock. Is there anyone worth talking about here? Not for me.
Chad Pinder hit a 480-foot home run in Oakland, which is worth mentioning.
Okay, but it was off who? Ben Taylor. Come on.
I really think, you know, if you're not Giancarlo Stanton and you hit a 480-foot home run, it's at least worth mentioning. I'm not saying that, you know, he's going to keep doing that, but that was something that, I don't know if you saw it, that was like a shot.
Yeah, he hit it off a prospect who Dave Dombrowski couldn't trade. So I think that should tell you what you need to know.
You go hit a 480-foot home run.
I'm not saying it wasn't impressive. I'm just saying consider who it was off.
All right, fair enough.
Eric, do you have anybody here that you think is interesting? Because, like, Ryan Rua to me, like, if you can use him in, like, a daily league, sure. Like, I'd throw him out there against every lefty on the schedule. But, like, there's limited value in guys like that for me.
I don't, so.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right. Tout NL, Rio Ruiz for 82. I'm assuming this was before the Matt Adams trade, right, Mike?
I think it was after, and the thinking here is that he's going to play third while Adonis Garcia is out.
Who did you pick up? Did you pick up anyone this week?
I picked up – I was the backup on Ruiz and Eric Sogard. I picked up Alexi Amarista and Christian Colon because I have no third baseman. And third baseman available were Ruiz, who I was second on, Colon, and Ty Kelly. And I literally needed a body at third base. Yeah, Eric, do you play only leagues?
I do. I'm in an NL only. Yep.
Yeah, isn't a blast?
It's both the most fun and most depressing part of my fantasy baseball experience.
Well, the auctions are great. Like that's the fun part. It's the rest of the season, particularly in a I hate to say it, like a league like Tout where there's not really much trading. Like leagues like that are fun if there's trading and there's wheeling dealing and you're like, okay, like I need pitching, this guy needs, you know, steals, let's make a deal. Everyone in Tout is and this isn't just Tout, it's almost every expert league, they're so afraid to make a deal where they lose the trade. And you know, it's kind of weird because it's like, well, honestly, no one really writes about these leagues during the season, so no one will know. Like, take a chance. If you're listening to the show and you're in Tout, take a chance. Make a deal.
Is that your way of trying to facilitate a trade?
Yeah, it's me saying I will trade Johnny Cueto after he is laying in another egg tonight.
Is this what Jerry DePoto does? He just goes on radio shows and he's like, hey, if you're listening to this in Milwaukee, have I got a deal for you?
Yeah. He makes the rounds in city to city. I assume you've heard him out there in Indiana, Eric.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. All over the place.
Serious question. Who the hell is Dinelson Lamet?
Is it Lamet or LeMay? I'm wondering. So
I've never heard of him. Who is he?
He's a Padres. I should have written a little bit more about him. He's a Padres pitcher, and he'll be up. I didn't mention the column because it was kind of iffy, but he'll be up this week against the Mets.
He was, well, not featured in the Baseball Prospectus Padres top 10. His last annual player comment was 2 years
ago. Look at his picture, man. He looks severe. Look at him. Ooh. On the media page. He's like, dude,
it's
do
a quality
not
photo.
Not me.
I have to edit that out. Okay. Four and a half walks per nine at AAA. Okay, I'm done. That's all I needed to see. You're down. Dinelson Lamet, LeMay, whatever. Brett Eibner for $1, I can get on board with. Anything else here? Eric, do you have anyone that you've... Do you want to talk about Eric Sogard?
We probably should have asked Wilson about LeMay before we got into that. He wrote a bunch of stuff about him the last, like, few months.
Great. Labor AL. Jared Hoying for $7. Anthony Alford for three. I don't see Anthony Alford as a guy who's staying up. I mean, fantastic athlete, but he was jumped straight from double A because they literally needed a body to play center field. Alford, I can't see him having much value this year, right? Anybody?
No. Okay. No, I don't. I think they brought him up because it was a 40-man issue where he was the only guy on the 40-man that they could bring up without making a corresponding move, and right. You know, it's because of the Pillar suspension. So yeah, I don't see much value for him this year.
Anybody, Eric? Anybody worth talking about here? This is kind of where
the AL has been brutal this year. Like every week, it's like this. There has not been a. I picked up Jordan Montgomery about a month ago. I got him for $9. That might have been the most exciting move there's been in labor this year on the Fab front.
Like Ryan Tepera was one of the pickups this week. Like,
yeah.
I don't want Ryan Tepera on my team unless he's giving me a guided tour around Buffalo, New York. That's like the only reason I would have him.
That's a deep cut. So I sometimes mention the tout AL. So Michael Kopech was picked up this week. Will he be up this year at all?
Are you asking me or Eric? Eric,
I'm asking either one of you.
Eric, take this one.
You go first.
I wasn't. Like at the beginning of the season, if you had asked me, I would have said no. I mean, I haven't followed him as much as you two might have, but my assumption would still be that seems like a pretty deep stash this season.
I can't envision him being up this year. Like, what role is he in? if they're going to bring him up to pitch an inning, that's
just
a waste.
Just to give some background, so this was Chris Liss of RotoWire who picked him up. Chris is a bit of a character if you either follow him on Twitter or you know listen to him on SiriusXM.
He
loves to stash the rookies.
Yeah.
Like he's just a big and it's worked for him sometimes. Like he picked up Jose Fernandez, you know, when Jose Fernandez came up his rookie year and everyone's like, "Yeah, it's too early, you shouldn't be up." And he really benefited. But more often than not he doesn't hit. But, you know, in an only it doesn't matter. You can take like 10 or 20 of these chances. And you only need to hit on one of them. So I think that's thinking.
Yeah, I was going to say I can appreciate that. I've had Ahmed Rosario sitting on my NL-only bench all season just praying for the day he might see some playing time this season.
Well,
me too.
Like Yoan Moncada too. Like in even in mixed leagues, like I have shares of him that I'm just waiting on because the guy is awesome. I mean, his AAA numbers are insane. But yeah, it's tough. Gleyber Torres is another example where he just got promoted to AAA, and everybody looks at you know Chase Utley's 5 for his last 60. Like Torres is coming, and it's like maybe like it's not a guarantee. And even if he does get the call, there's no guarantee he hits either. You're still talking about the guy who's like 21. So I don't know. Prospects are yes. Every now and then you will have the success story, but. Still, these guys are the most high-risk investments you can make in fantasy. So, yeah, that'll do it for Expert Fab. Here's the fun part of the show where I get to make up whatever I want here, apparently. Eric, why don't you give me a player that you think has been the most fascinating player in baseball this season for you? And you can't say Billy Hamilton because that's cheating. I'm not giving you that out, but who to you has stood out this season? It can be a positive or a negative player.
Let's see. Actually, I know George, you and I have talked about this guy quite a bit online, but I still cannot get over the Jason Vargas experience. So actually, I'll just say this. The Kansas City pitching staff, I've written about Vargas. I've written about Nate Karns. That there's for those of you looking for starting pitching because maybe draft night didn't go well, Kansas City has supplied a couple that at least up to this point have kind of sustained some positive results. So I've started paying a lot more attention to who's on the mound in Kansas City over the past few weeks.
To be fair, Vargas got absolutely tattooed his last time out against the Yankees. And then last night, he got them again, second straight start. And they're maybe the worst matchup for him.
That's true, yeah.
Like, the worst possible team for a pitcher like him to face. And he actually wasn't that bad. I mean, he still took the loss. But I think it gets better from here. Like, if that's this great call, because if you're looking to buy on a guy like Vargas, like, this is the window. He's had two clunkers, and someone might be looking to get out if they own him. So that's a great call. Mike, I'll ask you the same question. Who's somebody that over the last couple of weeks you found yourself just shaking your head at? And it's not Justin Smoak.
Yasmani Grandal. I don't know what he's doing or why he's doing it. I know Chris Towers at CBS has written about him a lot on Twitter. But Grandal he's had this hitting streak where he's hitting for average. His ground ball rate has gone up. And his overall numbers are about the same as, like, you know, his TAV or whatever advanced metric you're looking at are about the same as what he's done in the past or a little bit better. So it's kind of fascinating to see the change. It looks like he's sacrificing some of that power of his for batting average, which, you know, that was always Grandal's profile. You go back and look at his career, he was an on-base guy. He was a guy where it's like, okay, I want him in an on-base league or a league that counts walks. I do not want him in a league that counts batting average, or at the very least to have to build in the discount. You know, he's been up there with Buster Posey or close to him as one of the best catchers in baseball. And I'm not just talking about fantasy. I'm talking about baseball. Thanks that batting average and thanks that approach. And I'm really interested to see if this continues for him. From what I've seen, it doesn't look like a fluke either. It looks like he's not going to, you know, hit at the rate he's been hitting. He's going to, you know, fall off, but the approach looks to me like it's going to stick with him. And I could see Grandal hitting like 270 this year, as opposed to, you know, 220 or 230, which is what he's done pretty much every year, you know, since 2013.
Yeah, the guy for me is Alex Wood. I've just been blown away by what I've seen. I mean, we talked about him on this show a little bit, Mike, throughout the off season and then at the start of the year, that I, you know, he was a guy I kind of liked and I could see stepping into the rotation and being pretty good. I didn't think he'd pitch like Clayton Kershaw. He actually has a lower ERA than Clayton Kershaw this season, which is pretty wild. And most of that's come now as a starter. You look at the strikeout rate, it's up. The arsenal's been really good. The sinker, velocity's up a little bit, but he's getting a lot of swings and misses. The breaking ball combination's been good. This is basically the best stretch of Alex Wood's career. And the only concern is health. Like, you're just never going to know. It's like James Paxton. Like, if you could guarantee that he's healthy, maybe he's a top 10 pitcher or something. But I don't know if Wood's going to be able to, you know, make 25, 30 starts. We'll see. But yeah, he's been fascinating to me.
I was going to say, you know, lately, George, Corey Dickerson's been making me shake my head.
That's a good one. We were talking about this before the show. Like, I've gone back and forth on Mike knows this. I've gone back and forth on Dickerson, where I was the last guy, you know, on the bandwagon that crashed, and then now I was very anti Dickerson coming into the year after last season's debacle. I mean, what have you guys thought about Dickerson? To be honest, like, I didn't see this coming from him. This is the best possible version of Corey Dickerson, what we're seeing.
Well, first of all, hi Yancey, if you're listening, because you know, Yancey Eaton on Twitter, it has a whole thing with Corey Dickerson and is very excited about him and has a nickname that I don't know if I should share or not. I'll share it. It's C Dick Dong.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's solid. It's up there.
It's solid. Yeah.
It's good.
So, you know, Dickerson's someone who, you know, he moved out of Coors and he looked really bad, like, you know, last year, and people were like, well, there's some power there, but there's almost nothing else. And, you know, I said this before the show, you know, plantar fasciitis, and there's often a lag with that, where even after you get that treated or get the surgery, and I forget which one Dickerson got, there's still a recovery. You're just kind of not comfortable with your feet or with your legs. And Dickerson this year has gone back to looking comfortable in the box. And yeah, he's gonna tail off. He's not going to hit, you know, 40 home runs, or at least that's implausible. But it's pretty easy to see him hitting, you know, 25, 30 and having that average up around 270. And that's a really good player. Like that's a player in fantasy that I can kind of believe in. The one thing with Dickerson that you're going to miss, you know, he's just not going to run anymore. That wasn't a big part of his game, but it was something in Colorado that, you know, and I'm kind of looking here to see if I'm, you know, wrong about that. He stole eight bases in 2014. Well, he stole eight bases. There was always that, like, you know, 8 to 10 potential. Like, that's just not going to happen. Now you're looking at, like, nothing.
Right. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break here. And when we come back on the show, we're going to have a brief conversation with Joshua Housam. He's the co-editor-in-chief of BP Toronto. We talked about some Blue Jays topics with him, and then we'll be back with these guys to wrap up the show after that. So let's talk to Josh, and then we'll come back and wrap up the show. Welcome back to episode 134 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Perspectives Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell, joined now by the co-editor-in-chief of BP Toronto, and he is the co-host of the Artificial Turf Wars podcast, BP Toronto's official Blue Jays podcast. He is Joshua Housam. Josh, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
I brought you on because there's a lot of different things going on with the Blue Jays right now. Number one, the lineup is just an injury-riddled mess, and they've had some interesting developments there. But I want to start with a guy who's been one of my favorite pitchers in baseball for a while now, and that's Marco Estrada, because there are just so many interesting things going on with his profile. If you look at the numbers right now, 3.30 earned run average in 10 starts, but the strikeouts are way up this year, and his last start, he struck out 12 against the Orioles. What have you seen from Marco Estrada being up close and watching him on a pretty consistent start-to-start basis? What has stood out for you with Marco Estrada this year?
Well, I mean, this is the guy I've probably written about Estrada 15 times over the last 3 years because he's just the most interesting pitcher in the league to me. Mm. It's funny, you just mentioned his numbers, his 3.30 ERA, his higher strikeout rate. I have, from what we're seeing, I think that's going to get even better. So he's changed his pitch mix a bit this year, throwing more of that otherworldly changeup. But he's not actually getting more swings and misses than normal. But what it's doing is it's generating more called strikes because batters are guessing on those fastballs in the corner and letting them go by. So that's actually how his strikeout rate has gone up. But he's normally this heavy, heavy fly ball pop-up pitcher. And this year that has gone away. His BABIP has soared to what is for the regular league 295 or so, which is right, but for him that's way outsized. And there's no difference in his movement, no difference in really where he's throwing the ball, but his pop-up rates have fallen from 14.5% in 2015 and 16.2% in 2016 to 5.2% this year, and I think that's going to correct.
It seems like a lot of his success hinges on control and locating his pitches where he wants to on the outer edges of the strike zone. And I thought one of the interesting things I read that he talked about prior to his last start, where he had a lot of success against Baltimore, was that he wanted to be more effective locating his fastball up in the zone. He felt like hitters were having a chance to get under the fastball and drive it when they guessed correctly. So I think we saw a lot of that in his last start. Do you think he started to do a little bit better job in terms of locating the fastball up in the zone, maybe get a few more of those easy pop-outs like you were talking about?
Yeah, I think he has been. I mean, even the start before that, it was much of the same. He was starting to get that fastball up. You know, those starts where Tampa hit him, he was locating some pitches more middle in where he's not really strong. But I mean, he has that extreme rise. I mean, you know, fastball can't actually rise, but his fastball fights gravity more than anybody else's in baseball. And so when he pitches up in the zone, that's when he gets those extreme pop-ups. So as he starts to find himself a little bit more, I think that it's going to revert back to normal.
He's one of those hashtag spin rate guys that we talk a lot about. Aside from the strikeouts, you know, you brought up a good point. What does Tampa know about Estrada that the rest of the league hasn't caught on to yet? Because if you look at Estrada's numbers, they're kind of strange. A 4.74 DRA, which is deserved on average, and that's Baseball Prospectus's metric as far as estimating a pitcher's earned run average. It seems like Tampa has a good idea of what to do against him at the plate. Why haven't more teams been able to employ that approach against Estrada?
Well, I think that actually what's part of what happens with Tampa is they have a notoriously impatient team.
Sure.
Which oddly plays against the Marco Estrada's strengths, because he relies on people getting themselves into ugly counts and then chasing a changeup in the dirt and then they're done. They just go up there hacking and then they eventually get a pitch where because he does leave pitches up every now and then, but not high enough. And they get them and they hit them out of the park. That's basically what has been his problem. The last five outings against Tampa, when they've hit him, he's made a mistake here and there. And because they're always swinging, they just happen to hit it out.
Let's talk about the lineup a little bit, because obviously it's missing a really integral piece in Josh Donaldson. And you also have Edwin Encarnacion no longer in the picture. So it feels like a lot of the weight has shifted on the shoulders of Jose Bautista. And right now he's just gotten off to a pretty dreadful start. The average has ticked up in the last couple of weeks. He's hit for a little bit more power. He's up to 7 home runs now, but batting only .227. This is not unexpected for a guy who turned 36 years old in the offseason, but have you been a little bit surprised at the decline we've seen from Bautista this year, and do you think he gets close to even what he was a year or two ago now?
Well, the first part of that, yeah, I did not expect this. I actually thought he was going to rebound a bit from last year just based on the way his season ended and the fact that his shoulder is healthy now. It all signs pointed to maybe not him turning back into a superstar, but at least a more productive, healthy player. And he was just dreadful. I think he had one home run in the entire month of April.
Yeah.
But there are signs that he's doing better. He's starting to hit the ball harder. His exit velocity is up 2 miles an hour this month. You know, his launch angle is a little more stable. His swing speed is up. Everything, all the signs are pointing in the right direction. But at the same time, he's still striking out a lot, which has kind of not been his MO over the course of his career. And I think that that's going to be the problem going forward. I don't think he's ever going to get back to the fantasy and regular baseball star that people are used to seeing.
Justin Smoke's a guy for me who I don't think any of us expected to have a quote-unquote breakout campaign, but it seems like the power and patience where he's not striking out a lot. If you look at his strikeout rate, he's under 20%, but he was over 30% a year ago. He's consistently been around 25 to 30% throughout his career. He's cut down on the strikeouts. He's walking a ton still. It just seems like it's all kind of coming together, and he's maximized his effectiveness when he does swing. There's a lot more power on contact this year. What's Justin Smoke doing differently than in previous years? Is it as simple as that? He's just had better control of the strike zone, and he's hitting for more power?
Well, actually, I think he's had worse control of the strike zone. If you look at his numbers, he's chasing more than he ever has in his life. But what he's done, and this – Kevin Pillar had the same kind of concept earlier in the season, is he's more focused now on driving the pitches that are in the strike zone, whereas in the past he was always looking for that perfect pitch, and he'd get himself into these two strike counts, and then he'd strike out on a curveball of the dirt, and that was just the way it would go for Justin Smoke. But this year he's attacking earlier in the count a lot more when people throw them in the strike zone, and that's helping him drive the ball more, because he's getting these good pitches to hit and not missing them.
How do you see that whole rotation shaking out? I know Steve Pierce is on the DL right now, one of my favorite guys. You can platoon him against lefties and just let him eat. But you have Kendrys Morales as well, who can't really – I mean, he could play first base, but he's kind of clogging up the designated hitter spot. Then you have Rowdy Tellez waiting in the wings, one of my favorite prospects in the game. I have to say, dude can hit. How do you see this whole thing shaking out, not only for this year, but long-term at the position? Because it seems like they have a lot of those guys locked up for a pretty substantial period of time.
Yeah, I mean, for this year, I think it's going to mostly work itself out just because Pierce is reasonably comfortable in the outfield and the Jays are pretty shallow there. But, you know, going forward, I think that it's going to be tough because Tellez, like you said, he can hit. And he's starting to heat up at AAA. This is what he always does. He struggles at the beginning and then he adjusts and starts destroying a league. It'll be very interesting to see. I think it really all will hinge on what happens with Justin Smoke going forward this year. If his adjustments are real, I think that they're going to have to move somebody in the offseason because they're not going to want to block their best hitting prospect they've had in a while, I think.
Yeah, he's going to be a good one. And we're talking Toronto Blue Jays with Joshua Hausam. He is the co-editor-in-chief of Baseball Prospectus Toronto. And let's shift to the rotation here, because we've talked about Marco Estrada, but the other guy who you have to touch on is Marcus Stroman. I'm always fascinated by him. I convinced myself in the offseason that we weren't never going to get the ace version of Marcus Stroman. I think we all really want, but I think he's been pretty good this year. What are your impressions of Stroman so far, and what do you think the ceiling looks like for him? Are we witnessing it right now, or do you think there's another level that he can ascend to?
I think this is probably it. I hate to put ceilings on Marcus Stroman because he always seems to prove people wrong.
He has his whole career, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, that's his whole thing. He just plays with the biggest chip on his shoulder. But he's never going to be a big bat missing guy just because of the nature of his pitching profile. He throws so many sinkers and just relies on people beating them into the ground that it does limit his overall effectiveness because, you know, when you're doing that, guys find holes and runs score. It's just the nature of baseball. Put the ball in play, good things can happen sometimes. But he's really, really fixed the sinker and the slider, which were both problems for him last year. The sinker was up a whole lot, and the slider was looking too much like his curveball. So hitters were really only basically seeing two pitches, even though he throws like five.
Yeah, he's got quite the mix there. I also read a lot that he changed a little bit of his delivery in the second half. I think is that right, that he changed something after? I think it was a start in Kansas City. I want to say like July or August, somewhere around there. He made some sort of change, and that really helped him out. Does that sound right?
Yeah, and that was actually specifically to help the breaking ball because his slider and his curveball were starting to look exactly the same. So he tweaked a little bit so he could start going back to the hard breaking ball when he had it, and that's what he uses to get strikeouts. And it really did help him going towards the end of the season. So there was optimism coming into this year, and he's basically doing this year what he did at the end of last year.
You know what's weird about Stroman is I always remember him coming up through his amateur career because he was a pretty big collegiate prospect. You could see him, he pitched for Team USA as well, and I always remember him having a really great slider. So I'd be encouraged to see him go to that pitch more. Maybe that's the strikeout pitch he's looking for. But I have to ask you about Russell Martin here. Do you think it doesn't get emphasized enough how big of an impact his loss has on the rotation? Because we can talk all day about how great he is as a framer and all the other things he does defensively, but it just seems to me like when he's not there, things really change for this team. So has that been a much bigger loss for the rotation than people are maybe giving credit?
Yeah, thankfully he's back now, but
right.
Yes, I really do think that is the case. I actually got to talk to Martin about this before the season, and it doesn't get talked about a whole lot, but the way that he handles pitching staffs in terms of calling games, it's just so different from what we're seeing with some of these other catchers. With Marco Estrada, it doesn't matter so much, and which is why Luke Maley still catches him, because you just call fastballs and changeups and that's it.
Pretty easy.
Yeah. But for guys like Stroman, especially, his pitch mix is so important, and the comfort level that they have with him is so important, and I think that's a big part of it.
Joe Biagini. We got to do it. We got to talk about this guy. You were saying that when you've talked to him, he's one of the more interesting guys around the clubhouse, just his demeanor and personality. But what I've really been impressed with is his ability to throw strikes. He gets ahead with a fastball. It feels like it's a really heavy fastball, a lot of ground balls. He's got pretty good breaking stuff. It feels to me like he can be a guy who gives you five or six innings every fifth day and becomes a big piece of that rotation long term. This is quite a success story for a guy who was a Rule 5 pick a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's something that sort of shocked everybody. He was a middling starting pitching prospect for the Giants for a long time, and then in Double A he finally had a decent season, but his strikeouts disappeared. So people thought, oh well, fluky season, he's never going to be anything. Comes to the Jays, and then he just learned how to pitch in the big leagues, which is not something that you see happen very often.
Right. Yep.
But he has a starter's repertoire. He's got five pitches. Well, four. He doesn't throw the sinker all that much. But like you said, his four-seam fastball is so heavy that he gets all these ground balls. And he does have good command, and he has good separation between his pitches. He has to build the stamina. You know, he hasn't done it yet, so we can't say whether he can go beyond those five or six innings that you talked about. But he has the stuff and the command and the composure on the mound to be a major league starter. And I think he actually is. This is his role in the future. He'll probably go back to the bullpen at some point this season if everyone gets healthy. But by next year, he's going to be a full-time starting pitcher.
If you look at some of the quote-unquote advanced metrics, I always quote DRA, and he's a 2.09 DRA, which I believe is one of the best marks in baseball this year. I believe it's like top 20. The strikeouts aren't big, but a 57% ground ball rate. He looks like he's got the stuff. I'm very intrigued to watch him long-term. A guy who I was really wrong on this year. We talk a lot about our hits. We don't focus on the misses as much in the fantasy community, as you can probably imagine. But I was dead wrong on Francisco Liriano. I thought, based on what we saw at the end of last season when he was working with Martin and he seemed to have pretty good control again, it's never going to be great. But yeah, I think he had the walk rate under 4 in a couple of starts with Toronto. And then in spring training, he was fantastic. And it just felt like, to me, Liriano would have a couple of starts here where he just looked like he had no confidence in his stuff and couldn't throw strikes. Are you concerned about Liriano long term? I think you have to be. But what's the level of concern in Toronto right now with him?
Well, yeah, I mean, he is Francisco Liriano. So,
I mean, yeah, it's inherently risky. I understand.
I do think a big part of what happened with him was that he was hurt. I mean, his velocity fell by almost a mile an hour, or actually 1.5 miles per hour from last year. And for a guy whose stuff has always been his calling card, it's just elite stuff with mediocre command. When the stuff falls, that makes that's why he's just getting rocked. And he was walking everybody. And when he was in the strike zone, he was getting crushed. So oddly, I think the DL might actually have been the best thing for his season. I still worry because he's getting older. And he is Francisco Liriano. But I do think that the second half could be maybe not what he did the second half here last year, which was otherworldly. But I think he could be closer to what people thought they might have been getting this year.
That's actually a really interesting point that you bring up, that sometimes finding out a guy is injured is maybe the best thing, because it means maybe there's nothing else wrong. It's just he was diminished because of the injury and everything might be okay, so long term at least. So yeah, that's a good point. All right, I want to finish our conversation here on the most polarizing topic in baseball, not just fantasy baseball, but actual baseball. This is a topic I'm obsessed with, and that is the hashtag home run surge, as I like to call it. And I'd be interested in what your take is on everything that's gone on, because we had the Ben Lindbergh piece that came out and kind of dismissed the juice ball theory based on evidence provided by Major League Baseball. So that's kind of out the window. But we are seeing guys hit for a lot more power than they had in, you know, previous years. It's about now, since the second half of 2015, that runs and home runs have really risen. So what do you kind of attribute that to? And I know it's a complicated question, but what are some of the big factors, at least in your mind, that you gravitate towards as causing this?
Well, I do think a big part of it is the prevalence of information on what leads to power. I mean, we've seen it with guys like Daniel Murphy and Ryan Zimmerman, you know, this attention to hitting the ball in the air, or Josh Donaldson when it comes to Blue Jays players. You know, they know what they need to do when they've always been taught line drives, ground balls are what you need. Now they know, well, fly balls or get home runs. That's what we always want to try to do. I think that's the biggest thing. On the flip side of that, I think it's because of what's happening with the pitching. There's more power coming out of the mound, and this desire to throw low in the zone, when you combine that with the attempt to lift the ball, it makes it a lot easier. That was sort of a circular answer, but I think that's a lot of what it is. These sinkers combined with fly ball hitters equals line drives.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, because when you have so much data available and you have players that are interested in looking at it and seeing how they can apply it to themselves. Well, when I get my pitch and I'm able to do this with it, or I'm able to hit it in the air, that really helps me. I've been interested in sort of the divide you see in terms of, you have some guys like Ryan Zimmerman's a good example, where he claims, well, I'm just healthy now, this is who I've always been, but you have all the other variables in place, like he's hitting more fly balls, and some of the other things. You have guys like Yonder Alonso who are in a similar boat. So do you think that we're going to run into trouble in the future now when we try and put all these guys into certain buckets, and really it's just hard to predict who's – like, I want to read the feature on a guy who hit more fly balls and sucked. Like, I'm still waiting for that piece, right?
Was that Ryan Schimpf?
Trevor Story, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not good.
I think that's a good point. I think it makes predictive analysis really hard when you've got just guys making massive changes – in trying to do things. It's hard to predict what's going to happen with guys. I mean, nobody saw Ryan Zimmerman coming.
No. Well, Brett Sayre, but he's on an island. He's crazy. And once again, we're back at the point where we're still trying to discern signal from much more noise than we had anticipated. Mm-hmm. We have more data than ever, but we know less and have less. It has less predictive value than we ever could have imagined. So, Josh Hausam, tell everybody a little bit about the podcast, what you're working on, and where they can find your stuff over at BP Toronto.
Okay, well, we do the podcast once a week. It's called Artificial Turf Wars. My co-host Greg Wisniewski and I, and we get guests from around baseball. Sometimes they're scientists, sometimes they're journalists, sometimes even professional players. And we just talk about what's going on in the Blue Jays land. And that's kind of our raison d'etre over at BP Toronto. We try to cover them from pretty much every angle. We have minor league and major league business. We have humor. We have analysis. We have pretty much everything. So if you like the Blue Jays and don't know what you like about them, that's where you want to go.
Absolutely. So I'll make you a deal. When Rowdy Tellez gets called up, you have to have me on the show just so we can talk about Rowdy for like an hour. Does that sound good?
All right, we got a deal.
There you have it. Josh Hausam. You can follow him on Twitter. He is at Joshua Hausam. Check out his work over at BP Toronto. Josh, thanks for coming on once again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We're back. Thank you for listening to episode 134 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Perspectives Fantasies podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us on baseballperspectives.com. If you sign up for a super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. If you send us a question, we'll get back to you anytime, usually within 12 hours. Ask us about player comps. We love those questions. They're great. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at George Bessel. Mike is at Mike Gianella. And Eric is at Eric Roseberry. Eric, thanks so much for coming on here today. Really appreciate it. It was great to have you on.
Yeah, I mean this. The last two or three years, this has been my favorite fantasy podcast. So this is quite the dream come true to make my Flags Fly Forever debut.
I think you hung in there pretty well. That was a quality start, as we like to say, from the call up there. We'll have Brett Sayre back next week, hopefully. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Make sure you go subscribe to Eric's podcast. He's actually going to have, by the time you're listening to this, he'll have interviewed Tim Kirkchin, and that podcast will be up soon. So make sure you subscribe to On Baseball Writing on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to thank Joshua Hausam as well for coming on the show tonight. A lot of great Blue Jays discussion. We dove in deep on Marco Estrada and a bunch of other stuff. Make sure you go follow him and check out his work at BP Toronto. So for Eric Roseberry and Mike Gianella, this is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until our next show, so long, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later.
I like it. Nicely done. guys see the one in the bat signal?
I actually haven't checked the bat signal in a few days.
You'll know which one it is. Eric, you probably know which one it is. Which one am I talking about?
I'm digging now, but...
It was great. I don't know if I saved it or not. I can't remember. It said, like, Ronald Acuna's comps are Mike Trout. Is he really that good?
Oh, there it is. I noticed the highest comp for Ronald Acuna is Mike Trout.
That is really
How
good.
How often are these comps updated?
That is really good. Oh, that's excellent.
Oh, man. It might be the greatest bat signal we've ever gotten.